It's time for Roast Chat on Blog Talk Radio. We're the only show on the airwaves dedicated to growing roses. We're glad you've joined us today. Our phone lines are open, and we'd love to hear from you during today's show. The number to call is 347-677-1870. Or send us a tweet using the Rose Chat hashtag on Twitter. Join us as we explore the world of roses.
Underwriting support for Rose Chat Radio is provided by Haven Brand Soil Conditioners, providing generations of gardeners with a truly all-natural alternative to chemical fertilizers with their line of composted manure teas and alfalfa teas for roses. Find them online at ManureTea.com.
I'm Chris Van Cleve, your host for Rose Chat. We've got an interesting show lined up today. In just a few minutes, we'll be chatting with one of the nation's leading integrated pest management experts, Baldo Villegas. If you have a question about insects or disease control in your garden, please give us a call at 347-677-1870. Baldo would love to talk with you about bugs in your garden today. And a little bit later in the broadcast, Jim Thayer joins us to talk about the perfect garden hose. Now, if you sign up for our weekly Rose Chat Radio email updates, we're entering your name in a drawing for a 50-foot Tough Guard hose. Now, if you're already on the list, don't worry, we're including your name in this drawing as well. All you have to do is click on the link provided on the show page on Blog Talk Radio. For those of you that are listening via podcast player or iTunes, that's blogtalkradio.com/rosechat. Then click on the link to register. You have until midnight Sunday, March 30th, to enter. Good luck to you. Now, Teresa Byington joins me now. She's got roses on her mind today. She and Greg have been planting roses with this new contraption called the Rosomatic. And I want to hear all about that, Teresa. Good morning.
Hey, Chris. We're planting a little bit of everything from old garden roses to hybrid teas and David Austin English roses. And we're planting them in unclaimed areas of our property where there's lots of clay to deal with. So Mr. G bought a new power tool. It's an auger, and he calls it the Rosomatic. Works like a charm, and it cuts the digging workload for sure. And he's a guy who likes a lot of tools, and so it makes it a lot more fun. So we're having fun for sure.
Sounds like fun. Sounds like a replacement for the garden weasel.
It just might be.
Well, I guess with all those roses, you know, you're already thinking about how to keep those roses in prime condition. Before you know it, you're going to have some blooms.
Oh, and we can't wait. You're absolutely right. We're so glad that Baldo is joining us today to talk about solid integrated pest management program to keep our roses healthy. Baldo is a leading expert for the American Rose Society on rose insects and diseases. He's an entomologist, a gardener, a horticulturist, a rose nut, and he's the keeper of the buggiest website on the internet. So we're excited to welcome him to Rose Chat today. Good morning, Baldo.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
We're great. We're so glad you're with us today.
Oh, it's a great day today here in Orangeville, California, which is just north of Sacramento.
Oh, what's your temperatures like out there this morning?
I think it's in the 60s. It's supposed to rain tomorrow, but today looks like a beautiful day. So as soon as I'm done with the rose chat, I'm going to be in the garden planting roses.
Oh, perfect. Perfect way to spend a beautiful day. One of the things that I know the least about is bugs that bug my roses, so I'm so excited to learn from you today. And you're known for having the buggiest rose website on the internet, so could you explain that?
Oh, you know, when the American Rose Society was putting together their website, I learned how to do websites as well because I was part of the committee. So I put together my website in the middle 90s, about the time of the American Rose Society's website. And for many years, I had been giving programs using slides. So this was the opportunity to put together all these slides that I had. You know, I have over 30,000 slides, and I wanted to put them in one place. So I went through my slides and I chose a lot of the things that Rosarians and friends of mine would enjoy or learn from. So I put them in one place. So what I did is I just kind of went through and I said, okay, what are the worst problems in rose horticulture? And then I just I put the diseases and the in the pests of roses in there. Now there's a lot of stuff in there. I also put a lot of pictures of other insects, as well as some beneficials and a lot of pictures of flowers, mainly roses, because I'm a, you know, I'm a rose nut like everybody else. So there's lots and lots of pictures in there of roses if you want to see what's best to grow. So that's how that website became about. And then from there, you know, I tried to change it on several occasions, and then people kept asking me, no, Baldo, we know where everything's at, and we have everything. Apparently, everybody has links to my page and to specific pages in my page, so they don't want me to change anything.
Yeah, you're right.
If I change anything, boy, this, I get all kinds of heck from everybody else because they get bad links and things like that.
Yeah, so I'm well linked to your page, Baldo.
What was that?
I said I'm well linked up to your page, so don't change anything.
It's a great, great resource. Baldo, let's talk about some of the most common bugs and diseases that create havoc in the rose garden and how we can take care of them. And we'll start with thrips. How can we deal with them?
You know, there's a lot of different thrips. You know, one of the things that I tell people for in you know, as a pest management tip, is always to know exactly what type of insects you have in your garden. It's very important to know your resources too. So what I recommend everybody to do, if you're starting, you know, in your garden, is to make a collection of some of the insects that you see in your garden, such as thrips. Put them in 70% alcohol, which is just a regular isopropanol, which you buy at the drugstore or at the store, and then get a white mud jar. Check some of those flowers or some of the leaves that you that have thrips damage. And then get to know your local agriculture department or your state extension service, and then persist. Always tell them that you want to know what species you have in your area, and then get them identified properly. I say this is because knowing the type of pest that you have, then you can go to university websites and then get the correct identification for dealing with them. This is very important because, you know, like down in Texas where, you know, a lot of my friends live and throughout the South, there's thrips called the chili thrips. And a lot of people just don't know how devastating this thrips is. Where I am, we have flower thrips are the most common. Now, what I tell people is as soon as the rose starts to open or the buds start to open, then you can mist some of those roses with a pesticide such as one of the systemic insecticides. Or there's another there's some other alternatives, greener alternatives such as conserve, there are some other pesticides you can use, but you have to be careful whenever you use any broad spectrum insecticides. Only concentrate on the top of the plant, you know, the upper one third. If you spray any lower than that, and using broad spectrum pesticides, you might kill off the beneficial insects, and that might cause problems because you get spider mites and other pests coming in. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it sure does. And, Baldo, we had a question online about orthane. How does orthane work for thrips?
Well, you know, that's an example of a broad-spectrum systemic insecticide. I used to use it a long time ago. I haven't used it in a while. It's systemic. In other words, you use it, and then the green tissue of the plant, such as the leaves and the stems, will absorb the orthene, and then it translocates it. Generally, mm-hmm. it goes up the plant, okay, from the source of where it is absorbed, and then it goes up into the stems and into the foliage and up into the some goes into the blooms. Not everything goes to the blooms because they're usually in an abscission layer of 2 or 3 cells thick that stops most of the systemics from going into the flower. So if you use an orthene to control thrips, you have to use a mister. You know, put some in a spray bottle and then mist individual blooms. And this is what I do, you know, when I'm getting real close to showtime and I want those perfect blooms to enter in the show. I go in there and then I see it. As soon as I see color on the blooms, I mist them with a particular insecticide that I'm using.
What a great idea.
So that's
idea.
How orthing works.
Great idea. Let's move to aphids. They're tiny, but they sure do love our new buds. What can we do about those?
You know, in my own garden, I have seen aphids for the last, I saw them built up in the last 2 to 3 weeks, as soon as you had the nice warm weather coming in. Mm-hmm. And I saw a lot of the lady beetles out there working on them, and I said, yes, yes. But one, my silver bullet around here is a beetle called the soldier beetle. And this is kind of an elongated beetle, longer than wide. And in my area, it's kind of dark, and it has a red head. And this one is my silver bullet. As soon as I see that, I know that those aphids are going to be under control. And those beetles come in about a week time. They just wipe out all the aphids in my garden. It's remarkable how much these beetles eat. And anyway, I generally see it around this time. Yesterday I was potting up some roses, and I saw the first one for the season. So I am not going to be spraying any insecticides to control the aphids because I know I have the soldier beetle ready to come in and wipe them out. Now, if you choose to use insecticides, you can use systemic insecticides. But again, be aware that if you have a lot of beneficials, you're going to kill them off, and you don't want to wipe out all of your beneficials. So what I do is I kind of scout my area, kind of look around my garden. If I see a lot of beneficials, I hold off from any sprays.
Mm. The soldier beetle that you mentioned, I know we can buy ladybugs in bulk. Can we buy soldier beetles?
No. What I do, you know, I only use pesticides only when I need them.
Mm-hmm.
And generally for the past, at least 10 years, I have very rarely used any systemic insecticides. I do use fungicides. But what I've been doing is I've been monitoring the populations of the insects, of the beneficials. So what I've done in my new garden, which I started 4 years ago, is I put a lot of perennials or companion plants in the garden.
Mm-hmm.
And this, in turn, attract a lot of beneficial insects. And they attract it because they bloom. They provide the beneficials with nectar and pollen. And then they stay in the yard. And then, of course, they search the yard for things to prey on or to oviposit on. And then and this is how I get this fantastic population of soldier beetles and other beneficial insects. I do not recommend people buying beneficial insects. Plant companion plants and the beneficials will show up. Believe me, I'm a believer of that. And I've seen this in my new garden. And in the last 3 years, I put at least 200 to 300 perennial plants in my backyard. I replaced the backyard with perennial plants. And then I'm going into a rose garden, and I'm putting a lot of best attracting perennials into the rose garden so that the beneficials can be attracted into the rose garden.
Could you make some recommendations on the companions that you're using with your roses?
Yes. The best one so far has been the yarrows. And I have a great collection of yarrows. I have at least 10 varieties of yarrows. And I plant them I'm planting them throughout my insect garden, which is my backyard. And then I'm going to start putting them in the rose garden to complement the rose garden. The other one that is very good for other insects is echinacea, black-eyed Susans. There's another one that I can't pronounce. my native language is Spanish, and anyway, so I can't pronounce them in the English language. But I'll think about it and I'll come up with it in a little bit.
Yarrow is perfect in my garden as well. I love it. It's just so easy to grow. It complements the roses when they grow, and it complements them in a vase. So I feel like yarrow is one of our win-win plants to pair with roses.
Yes. I can't think of the English name, but the scientific genus is Echinacea, and Agastache is the other one. Agastache is the other genus, and that's the one that I have. Oh, I have so many varieties of Agastache. They're very, very fragrant. They have the square stems, and they're known for their fragrance. And I have, probably 10 different varieties. Salvias, I have them throughout the garden. And these are all attracting beneficial insects. Buddleias, or the butterfly bushes, I have probably 30 of those plants kind of in the insect garden. And again, when those things are in bloom, my garden is just a show place.
Sounds beautiful. I don't know if you deal with, out where you are, Japanese beetles, but here in the Midwest, they are just horrible starting about the end of June. What would you recommend for treating Japanese beetles? We've thought about dynamite, but they're ugly and they're painful.
In the last 2 months, I've been traveling quite a bit. I just spent a week in the Northeast. I was in Connecticut for the last week. And their worst problem over there was rose midge. I mean, that was the number one problem. When I mentioned, what's worst? And they just said, no, that's the worst one. I said, how about Japanese beetle? And says, oh, that's not a problem anymore. I mean, they're is there, but it's not a problem. They think that the subbacillus that attacks that was introduced as a biologic control for a Japanese beetle is called the milky spore. And I guess it has become more common than people have been giving it credit. You can buy milky spore from various sources in the internet. And you can apply that to your lawn. And then what it is that the bacteria goes into the ground, and then the Japanese beetle grubs eat some of these bacteria, and then they get sick and die. And not only that, but a true biological control is one that where the bacteria just multiplies by the jillions inside the gut of the Japanese beetle, and thus propagates itself. If you keep moving it around, eventually you get a really good control of the pest. So I think, according to my friends in Connecticut, they are giving the milky spore a lot of credit. Now, there were some beneficial insects also introduced back in the 1900s, 1920s, 1930s, 40s. Some were wasps, but I don't hear too much about those as much as I hear about the milky spore. There has been some rose societies that have had workshops in conjunction with some university extension services, and what they do is that they meet in a particular area, they dig up the sod. And then they collect those grubs that are sick, and then they transfer those grubs that are sick to their area, and then they plant those grubs under the sod, and then this is how they can move the milky spore around too. And some time ago, somebody sent me some links to some of those workshops that were taking place. So I would say a milky spore is the answer.
I actually saw milky spore at Lowe's yesterday, so it's much easier to get than it used to be. So
good,
I don't self, so it is easier to get. Let's move on to black spot. What do you do
okay.
about that?
Well,
how do you,
you know, with black spot, the Naca roses are supposed to be very resistant to black spot. Not. There are some problems with Naca roses. They're not thoroughly resistant to black spot, mainly because some of the researchers at the University of Minnesota are finding out that there's a whole bunch of different biotypes of black spot. And then Bill Radler, who was the introducer of knockouts, he only tested against certain varieties of black spot. What I tell people is always go with resistant varieties. But what does that mean? In my own garden, I always go through and then I check my roses for disease pressure. I score the susceptibility of my roses against certain diseases. And when somebody asks me to give a recommendation on what roses do well in for my area, and then they don't want to spray, I give a recommendation of those roses that I found in my garden to be disease resistant. For most people that have black spot going, I said, well, let's come up with some kind of control program. And then I asked them, well, what kinds of pesticides are you willing to spray? And some people said, well, I don't want to spray very toxic materials. I said, okay, well, in those cases, there are some green materials out there. The soda, the sodium bicarbonate or potassium bicarbonate, which goes by several names. Remedy is one of the names that has been used for black spot control in certain areas. That's where very well. Neem oil. It's also an fungicide and insecticide, and that kind of is also very effective. But, you know, some of these green materials, you have to spray them more often than others. What I do is when I start seeing signs of disease pressure, then what I do is I spray a systemic fungicide. And some of the ones that I use things that I can find at the local box store or my local nursery. And I find things like Immunox, Banner Max, the Bayer material that you can drench it. Bonite has the same material. I use some of those materials that I can readily get. But it's important to rotate your materials with different materials that have different modes of action. So the ones that I just mentioned have the same mode of action. It's very important to put Mancozeb in there. In fact, my first treatment would be spray with either neem or Mancozeb, then switch to a systemic material, and then go back to a different mode of action, and then back to systemic. So that's my recommendation for black spot.
Great, great information. I think it's so true that regional information is very important in all of these diseases because they just do behave differently in different climates. What is the latest on Rose Rosette?
Oh, boy, you have to mention that.
Yeah.
And I was in Tennessee in early February, and I have seen more rosette in that visit than I have seen rose rosette in my life.
Oh, no.
And there at the convention where the convention was being held, it was held at the Marriott there in Franklin. Right outside, there was a mass planting of knockout roses. Every rose in there has symptoms of rose rosette. Rose rosette is associated with a virus. It's a new type of virus. They have completed most of the research proving that it's a virus, but not all of it, okay? So some people are still kind of wondering if it's really rose rosette. Also, a rose rosette in the past has been associated with a aerophyte mite, a very, very tiny mite about the thickness of a human hair, very, very tiny. So that's how long that mite is. Think of a human hair, and that's the length of the mite. And you find it under the at the base of the of the leaves, around the at the base of the leaf axils. Are you familiar with that? They kind of wrap around the stem of a rose, mm-hmm. and they're right there. And they're what they do is that they scratch and feed on that area of the stem, and then they cause all the bad deformations that go hand in hand with rose rosette. And again, knockout roses are extremely susceptible, as well as any of the descendants that had Rosa multiflora in them.
Mm-hmm. Last year we had a couple of roses that were exhibiting it looked just like what we've seen in magazines and online. So we sent a sample to Purdue Ag Department and to the Oklahoma group, and it came back that it was not, but it looked exactly. So it was a big scare, but I guess there's other things that can cause that mutated look.
Yeah,
but
I've been following Rose Rosette since 1985, around there. I saw it for the first time on wild roses up in extreme northern California in the mountains. And so I became aware of it. I took it back to the lab under quarantine conditions, and then some of the people in the lab, including one of the taxonomists that at that time was an expert on mites, he showed me how to work with a mite and how to tell which mite is transverse or is associated with the disease. And then the plant pathologist showed me, you know, how to diagnose this stuff. And, you know, there are a lot of mistakes made by people because they confuse it with misapplications of Roundup. So what I learned from my colleagues at the California Department of Food and Agriculture, where I worked for 35 years, was that I look for the mites first by looking in those areas that I told you before where the mites are at, under the leaf axils. And then if I see the mites, then I diagnose that as rosette. If I don't see the mites, then I start looking for misapplication of herbicides. And generally, in California, in every instance where a rose rosette has been called, you know, I look around and there's been a misapplication of Roundup or a herbicide. So that's the problem right now, is that most people just do not know how to tell the rose rosette from misapplications of pesticides.
Well, thank you for all that great information. Baldo, let's leave pests for a little bit and talk about your roses. Your Facebook profile says you're an entomologist, gardener, horticulturist, and rose nut. So we want to go straight to the part about your being a rose nut. How did you get started growing roses?
You know, we bought a house in Orangevale, California, as newlyweds, and my wife wanted some security around the house. So we planted probably around 60 roses, and we put them, most of them, we put them around the windows. Every window around the house had two or three roses around those windows. We didn't want anybody looking inside the house. And then, of course, from there, we started planting roses all over the place. And we were mainly looking at them for ornamental value. Later on, I got into the we became members of the Rose Societies in our area. And then some of the consulting rosarians kind of challenged me to exhibit roses. And anyway, that's how I got interested in roses. I got interested as a challenge to the consultant rosarians, which are the rose experts. And, you know, because I told them that they were just working too hard in their garden. I told them that the roses are, you know, they didn't have to work so hard to grow great roses. And that's still my bottom line, is that roses are easy to grow. And you can exhibit them and win Queen of Show without working so damn hard.
Well, they do become addictive, that's for sure. How many roses do you have?
the last count is around 1,500.
Whoa!
But there's probably another 1,000 in pots.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I saw on Facebook that you had a whole truck full of potting soil. What are you planting right now?
I have about 50 roses that I'm potting up that I brought back from my travels. That's what I'm doing right now. I'm potting them up and so I can put them in my pot collection. I have like a quarter of an acre here in my area that I use for my potted roses. And there's probably about 1,000 plants in there.
Oh, my goodness. I bet it's beautiful.
Then there's about 15 in the ground in the regular rose garden and around the house.
Oh, my goodness. We know that there's a rose named for you. Tell us a little bit about that rose.
There's actually two roses named after me.
Oh.
Michi Moe introduced a rose called Baldo in 2001. And that one is a cross between hot tamale and, I forgot the other name. Hot tamale is a miniature rose, and that's the mother plant. And it's a beautiful orange plant rose, big bloom. Mm-hmm. It probably could be a mini flora, but Michimo kept it as a miniature rose. Michimo just died last year. She's a hybridizer from Seattle, Washington, and she was a great lady. And then about 10 years ago, I met Whit Wells in Tennessee, and we became very good friends, and I helped him a lot in for the rose photography. I took basically he gave me all his roses. He gave me one of everything he had, including his seedlings. Yes. And what I did is I've been taking pictures of most of those roses, and I provided him with a huge collection of pictures, including a PowerPoint of all his roses. And anyway, he proposed a new rose for me in 2008 called Valdo Villegas. And he introduces a white blend rose. Well, there's no such thing as a white blend rose. There's only the category as white, but includes those blends. I call it a red blend rose. And it's a beautiful rose. It's exhibition type, mini flora. Goes the blooms are up to 2 inches in diameter, and it can be very, very beautiful. Unfortunately, it's a little bit sensitive to powdery mildew, but in the proper location, it can do very, very well.
Oh, beautiful. Baldo, you're an active member of the American Rose Society. Could you share with our listeners why you think being a member is important?
You know, I just spent a week with my rose friends, people that I, you know, are members of the American Rose Society, and I had a beautiful time with them. They showed me their gardens. We exchanged information very freely. They're consulting rosarians. I gave several programs on to the consulting rosarians, and boy, I tell you, I never have so much love for me from those people that were there at the consulting rosarian school, and I see that everywhere I go. As soon as I tell them I'm an American Rose Society member, boy, I tell you, they just welcome me with open arms. Of course, the American Rose Society has the Consulting Rosarian Program, which are the rose experts. And I used to be chairman of the American Rose Society CR program, as well as my district. And in there, we train people to recognize rose pest diseases and how to grow beautiful roses. And if you... if you befriend some of these consulting rosarians, they can help you a lot. I have some mentors that were consulting rosarians, and I owe them a lot for getting me started in roses. And, of course, one of the benefits is that when you get your membership with the American Rose Society, you get to go to other gardens free of charge. They don't charge you because they... with the membership card, you can get into some of these gardens that charge you maybe $10 to get in. So that's one of the main draws to for the American Rose Society. Also, you get your magazine, and which is full of information. And then whenever, if anybody has problems, all they have to do is call the American Rose Society, and they put you in contact with a local rose expert like me, and then they call me or they email me, and I've always helping people with the roses, recommend roses, nurseries or sources of roses, and I share rose information very freely.
Oh, that's what we find on Rose Chat. Everyone that loves roses is so good about mentoring and sharing their information, and the American Rose Society is just a wealth of information for anyone who wants to know more about roses. Baldo,
well,
it's been a pleasure to have you with us today. But I feel
like
you've only
tried to teach us. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Teach us. Baldo?
Yeah, Baldo?
Yes. Yes.
Thanks so much for coming and being part of our show today. It's been wonderful to have you.
Okay, thank you very much for inviting me, okay?
We hope you come
back. Baldo?
Okay. Yes.
Hey, before you go, I want to ask you a picture about that picture of you on Facebook with that sharing that big watermelon. Who's that with you?
What about it, Chris? Why don't you come on over and have some watermelon with me this summer?
Oh, that would be great. I'd love to.
I usually plant about 20 varieties of watermelons, and during the summer from August on, we have watermelon feeds every weekend.
Oh, wow.
Come on over.
We're going to try to do that. Thanks so much for being our guest today. We appreciate you coming on the show.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chris.
Thank
you.
Have
a good
day. Bye-bye.
Bye. Now, after this break, we'll be right back with Jim Thayer chatting about the perfect garden hose. And then Jerry Mahoney will join us to talk about the first Rose Show of the year. So don't go anywhere. There's more Rose Chat Radio on the way.
Hi, I'm Phil Paul with the American Rose Society. My family has been growing roses for some 50 years. My wife and I have grown roses across the United States for the last 25. There's nothing more breathtaking than a beautiful display of roses in full bloom.
No matter if you're an experienced rosarian or are just beginning your first rose garden, the American Rose Society is here to help. It's a tremendous resource for making your rose garden the envy of your neighborhood. There's even a rose photography contest for members to showcase the best of the best. Each member will be published in the American Rose magazine.
We invite you to become a part of one of America's oldest horticultural societies and the home of our national floral emblem.
For more information on becoming a member of the American Rose Society and on the rose photography contest, visit ars.org.
Good morning, everyone. This is Susan Fox of gagasgarden.com, and we're going to welcome to the show this morning Jim Thayer, and he's going to tell us about the perfect garden hose. I don't know about you, but I have a love-hate relationship with all of my garden hoses all over the yard. They can just be a total hot mess to deal with. They kink up, they're heavy to drag, they're hard to wind up, and the fittings leak or they're flimsy. And his company calls his garden hose the perfect garden hose. So good morning, Jim, and welcome to the show. How are you this morning?
Good morning, Susan. I'm great. I'm glad to be here. How are you?
Good, good. So can you tell us about this fabulous hose and how is it different from all of the hoses that I have all over my yard and the problems that I deal with constantly?
Well, Susan, like you said, I think everybody has a love-hate relationship with their garden hose. I know I do as well. You mentioned all the reasons everybody has problems with a garden hose. It's heavy, it's hard to drag around, it kinks. So the worst thing is the weight and the kinking, right? I mean, everybody hates their, you know, you get 100-foot of garden hose all the way out there and you've got to run back and unkink it and it's heavy to drag out there. So really the perfect garden hose solved that problem. So what we did was most garden hoses are PVC. What we did is we took a different approach. We use a substance called TPE. It's called thermoplastic elastomer. It's extremely, extremely flexible, and it's extremely, extremely light. So that's the inner tube of our perfect garden hose, is that TPE material. On the outside of the hose, we use a polypropylene helical design that wraps around that TPE inner tube. So that polypropylene wrap, or helix, we call it. It's actually a double helix, really prevents the garden hose from kinking. And the TPE material that the tube is made out of, like I said, is super, super lightweight. So your 50-foot garden hose weighs 6 pounds or under. right around 6 pounds, which is which most of the time is what catches people's attention.
Oh, that's incredible, because I know when I was going to solve my problem with the, you know, the plastic hoses, I decided, well, I'll buy the more expensive rubber hose, and then it weighed 80 pounds, and then the black came off all over, you know, the coloring from it. That was even more of a problem. So this sounds wonderful.
And the polypropylene helical on the outside of the hose, that we call it marking, what you're talking about, the black coming off all over everything.
Right.
The polypropylene helical on our hose is non-marking, so which makes it great for, like, say you own a boat, like in a marina. It's fantastic for a marina because you can drag the hose all over everything and it doesn't mark anything up.
Right, because that marking got everywhere, you know, against your leg, your hands, and it was difficult to come off. And plus the weight of that hose, and it may last forever. But what about heat? Because in extreme heat and temperatures, does it hold up?
Yeah, it actually holds up great. I have two of them on the back of my own personal house that I, you know, that I use, and I strung them out all summer last summer, and I actually left mine pressurized, which, you know, most garden hose manufacturers or distributors or retailers will not, you know, they'll tell you, you know, don't leave your garden hose pressurized, but I left mine pressurized in the sun. And it barely, the helical on the outside barely even faded. You probably know it comes in 6 colors in the 50-footer, and those colors stay strong even in the bad heat, even last summer's drought heat.
So does it come in just lengths of 50 feet, and then you couple them, or does it come in longer sizes?
Well, the hose does come in longer sizes. It comes in 25-foot lengths, 50-foot lengths, and 100-foot lengths. The 50-foot lengths, obviously, are the most popular. That's, you know, your garden length. But it also, you know, it also comes in 100-foot lengths. And if you want to use, like myself, for me, I've got a lot of things that are close to the house that I can just use 50-footers on. But then again, I've got a lot of things that are out a ways so that I need the 100 feet. So you can connect the hoses together. It's milled brass fittings as opposed to the stamped brass fittings that you see on most crimped-on garden hoses that you can practically crush between your two fingers. These hoses won't do that, and they're also wrench-friendly, so you can get them super, super tight, and they do not leak.
So how is it? Tell us, how is it developed? You know, what inspired the creator of this perfect garden hose? Do you know?
The creator of the perfect garden hose, his name, he's actually the owner of JGB Enterprises, we distribute the hose. His name's Jay Bernhardt, and he, you know, I think like everybody says, you said it, you know, they have a love-hate relationship with their garden hose, and he just was on a mission to just create the perfect garden hose. So we went to Syracuse University, and we're in Syracuse, New York, by the way. So we matched a grant with Syracuse University to develop the material that the TPE material and to really engineer this product. So we worked really closely with them, and then we went to Goodyear, actually Vance Technologies, Goodyear, which is Goodyear, their manufacturing arm, and they created a hose called Kink Guard at first. Well, they had a problem with the Kink Guard hose because it was cracking, and so we needed to re-engineer it. And we went back to the drawing board. We did some more work, and we really, you know, and then we came out with this product. But again, it was just the fact that, you know, your PVC garden hoses, they get destroyed in the heat. They freeze and crack. They burst. They're just awful. So we just wanted to make a perfect garden hose for everyone.
Do you have, just a thought, other products or any other products in the works type, you know, irrigation type products? I know we're constantly thinking of ways to keep our rose gardens watered, but right now, is this your only product, or are you thinking of new ones down the road?
This is our only consumer product. It's not our only consumer product. We do other consumer products such as, you know, suction and discharge and pressure washer. But yeah, for the home gardener, this is our only product right now. The product is only 2 years old. It was It took, you know, it was a 5-year program to get the thing started, and then we, you know, and then it came out, and it was tough getting it to the market. So they, you know, that's where I came in, and I brought it to the market a little bit more, and it's really starting to sell strong. It's ran on QVC already, I think 4 times this beginning of the season, and we're with True Value. We're on Lowe's.com already, and it's only been 2 years. So if I have my, let's put it this way, if I have my way, this hose has been so successful. If I have my way, we'll start to develop some other things too, maybe some soaker hoses. I'd like to actually get this hose FDA approved, and so it's potable, which is drinking water safe, and you know, organic gardeners could use it also if it was FDA approved and potable. So you know, we'll probably continue to engineer this product, continue to perfect this product, but yeah, I would like to add some products in the future.
You know, you said, Jim, Lowe's, QVC, where else did you say we could get it? So
your True Values, it's at select True Values. It will be in True Values warehouse very soon. We just signed on with them, which is really super exciting.
Okay.
And Do It Bestsellers, Ace Hardwares, Amazon.com is selling it, and so I mean it's readily available. You could visit your local Lowe's, and you could go online, look at the product number, bring it to your local Lowe's, ask about it, and they can order it there. We can ship it to the in store so you can see it, or we'll ship it directly to your home.
You know, Jim, we really need. I should have asked about. Is there a standard cost? About how much do we expect to pay for it? Is it
it's a little more pricey, but I think, you know, it's when people get it in their hands, the price is a non-issue. For a 50-foot garden hose, you can expect to pay about $55, right around in there. For the 25-footer, I think they're right around $40, and for a 100-footer, they're about $100. Maybe a little less than $100. I think Lowe's has it online for $99 or something like that. So, but you know, the cost to benefit is far and beyond.
Well, I can't remember, but I know when I upgraded to this rubber thing that I can't even lift, I paid a lot of money for that. You know, the one that I told you about. So
right.
I know to get something good, you pay a little bit more, but it pays benefits down the road. So
right.
Well, we're really glad to hear about this, and I hope it's a solution for many of us. And does it just roll up on a regular conventional one of those garden roll-up items, or it flexes back into shape, or is that what you recommend, how you store it?
Sure, it's really built for a hose reel to be reeled
okay.
up. It's super easy.
That's what
to
I was
go
thinking. I couldn't think of the name, hose reel.
Yeah.
I couldn't think of the name.
Yeah, you know, it's really built for a hose reel, and the reason is because the hose constantly wants to straighten itself out. So if you're one of those people who, you know, coil your garden hose on your grass or on your patio on the floor, it's a little tougher because, like I said, it wants to straighten itself out, so the coil gets a little bigger. But it's easy to do that as well. It's a little tricky at the beginning because obviously it's coiled very tightly on a hose coiling machine at Vance. So, but as you get using the hose, it loosens up a little bit and it really does reel in. You can go on YouTube.com and just search the Perfect Garden Hose or Tough Guard Hose, and I think there's a video of somebody actually reeling it up on a hose reel. It takes 2 minutes to reel up a 100-foot hose. It's amazing. It's fantastic for that.
Great. Well, we want to thank you, Jim, and we'll be sure to check it out because that would be a great solution and save us a lot of time for all the time we're wrangling with garden hoses and being so frustrated. So thank you so much for being on the show, and I'm sure we're going to be seeing more of you and your product out there. So thanks a lot. And
Thanks, Susan.
We'll talk to you next time. Okay, and we want to remind all of our listeners, don't forget that we'll be giving away a 50-foot Tough Guard garden hose to a lucky winner, so be sure to visit today's broadcast page and register for our weekly email updates to qualify. And the winner will be announced on our website at rosechatradio.com on Monday, April 1st.
That's right, Susan. Chris? And you can find more information about the Tough Guard Hose at toughguardhose.com. Now, don't go away. We'll be right back with a new feature for Rose Chat Radio, the Rose Show Roundup, a weekly look at the various rose shows going on around the country. Stay with us.
Hi, this is Jackie D'Elia with Southern Post Journal, and today I want to talk to you about manure compost tea. This is Authentic Haven brand from California. One of the things that I really like about this is how easy it is to apply. It's a simple cotton bag filled with composted manure. You drop it in your bucket, typically a 1 to 5 gallon bucket of water. Drop in your tea bag. You'll notice some of the brown liquids coming out, and that's the manure starting to mix with the water. Once that's finished, 1 to 3 days, you'll have some fantastic manure tea ready for putting on your plants. So I've got my manure tea brewing for about 3 days, and I'm going to take a peek in there and see what it looks like. It's got a great color, it's got a great smell, and it's ready to be applied to my garden. So whether you choose to put it in your watering can and a sprayer, or just take a bucket and drench it into your vegetable garden, it's very easy to use. I use it in my garden, and I highly recommend it. So give it a try.
Now, the Rose Show season for 2013 kicks off next week with the very first Rose Show of the year. And Jerry Mahoney joins me now from the Glendale, Arizona Rose Society to talk about their upcoming Rose Show. Welcome to Rose Chat, Jerry.
Well, good morning, Chris. You'll have to forgive my little froggy voice this morning. I've got everything's blooming here, so I've got a little allergy thing going on.
Well, we're glad you took time out to talk to us today. So we want to hear all about your Rose Show. When is it?
Well, the Rose Society of Glendale's Rose Show is on April the 6th, Saturday, and we're fortunate we have a partnership with the City of Glendale, so our Rose Show site is at Saguaro Ranch Park. It's a historic ranch and orchard area. There was a citrus orchard there for many years, and we have wonderful buildings that we can use for our Rose Society Rose Show and for our judges' lunch. And there's a historic rose garden there that we help maintain. So people who come to the Rose Show can tour the rose garden and walk the grounds and see the demonstration gardens. And we also have some little seminars that we do where we have some of our consulting rosarians that Baldo was talking about earlier talk to the people who come through to see the Rose Show and discuss pests and how to grow roses in Arizona and some of the other things, answer a lot of questions that people have.
Oh, wow. That sounds great. You know, it's wonderful to be able to, you know, not only attend the Rose Show, but visit a beautiful garden and also get some information. That's what are the times for the Rose Show?
Well, the Rose Show is open to the public from 1 o'clock until about 3:30. If you're coming to exhibit, we open up for people to start prepping their roses about 6:30 in the morning. Placement for your exhibition arrangements, photography samples, and horticulture samples stops at about 9:30, 9:45, right in there, and judging starts at 10. And then after the judges are done, we open it up to the public to walk through and see who won what and how to they get to see some of the examples of what grows really well here in Arizona, because we have several exhibitors that exhibit from the Phoenix area, and occasionally we have a few that come over from California with some of their roses.
Oh, wow. Wow. Well, that's really what it's all about, isn't it? It's about showcasing what can be grown in your area.
Right, and it's a great place if you don't know for sure what you want to grow or what will grow, is take a piece of paper and a pencil and walk around and make a list, because that's where you're going to see the best of the best. We do have, you know, Arizona has different growing conditions for roses, so people who move here from the Midwest oftentimes try to bring their favorites with them or find their favorites and plant them here, and that isn't always a rose that will tolerate our summers. We have two wonderful bloom seasons here, so we get to have rose shows in the spring and then again in the fall, but not every rose will tolerate that break in between with the 100 degree and plus heat. So we try to encourage people to grow varieties that are tolerant of the heat and resistant to powdery mildew, because we do have a little trouble with that. But we're blessed with not having too many bugs or pests.
Oh, well, that's incredible, because we're not equally as blessed here in Alabama. So that's
I understand that. I hear
yeah,
that.
You probably get that a lot, don't you?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Now, I want to talk about the different exhibits at the show. Now, I know that there's horticulture or the blooms. What else can people expect if they come to the show?
Well, we have the, you know, just the one bloom classes, and then we have some challenge classes where we exhibit blooms of roses in a picture frame type of setting, and that makes an interesting display. We also have people who like to build flower arrangements with primarily roses, and they are entered in our arrangement classes. They do traditional arrangements, arrangements in an oriental manner, and arrangements in a modern design. So we get a variety of arrangements that way. And then there's a new class for photography, where we encourage people who are photographers to take pictures of roses. There's a class for traditional, just a picture of a beautiful rose. There's classes for pictures that have been altered to abstract the picture a little bit and make it look, you can still identify that it's a rose, but it's been enhanced or abstracted so that it's looks different. It's a different way to present it. There's also abstractions where they don't look like a rose at all, but you get the feeling of the color and the movement of the rose and the garden. And then there's pictures of gardens. If you are close to a garden or you know of a particular garden that's well laid out, you can take a picture of that garden with a focal point in it and bring it and enter it.
Wow. Sounds like there's something for everybody.
There is, and if you don't have a rose garden yourself and you want to participate, you can always do the rose photography. The rules for all of those classes are contained in the schedule, and the schedule is up on our website. So anyone that is interested can go to the Rose Society of Glendale website and click on the link for the Rose Show booklet, and it tells you all of the information about entering and the rules for that and the times and the place.
Wow. Sounds great. Jerry, thank you so much for joining us today. I enjoyed chatting with you, and good luck on your Rose Show. I hope you have a big turnout, and we wish you many queens.
Well, thank you very much. I hope that we do well, and we look forward to hearing more from Rose Chat Radio.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I want to thank you, our listeners, for joining us today for Rose Chat on Blog Talk Radio. We'd love to hear your comments and feedback on today's show. Just send us an email at grow@rosechat.info. You can find us on Twitter by following the Rose Chat hashtag. You can like us, Rose Chat Radio, on Facebook, and be sure to check out our website, rosechatradio.com, for a full archive of all of our previous broadcasts. Join us next week for another broadcast of Rose Chat Radio. And as always, a big thank you to Annie Haven of Haven Brand Soil Conditioners for sponsoring Rose Chat. You can visit Annie on the web at manuretea.com or contact her via Twitter at greensoil. Well, until next time, happy gardening from your friends at Rose Chat.